And where are you, Jim? Let's get you up here. There we go. All right. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to our Contract Trust Conference Call, actually number 66. Today is September 8th, 2018. We are not accountants, tax professionals, lawyers, or currency dealers. We're not engaged in rendering legal, tax, accounting, or other professional advice. Should you require those services, you should retain competent advice from a professional in that field. Typically, by this time, I have my friend Judy helping me out with the call, but Judy's not here yet. So we have my webmaster, Jimmy. He's going to help us with this call today. So say good morning, Jim.
Good morning, everybody.
There you go. So thank you for joining us today. We are going to discuss the contract trust and why we think it is the best option for you for protecting your assets in this hopefully soon to occur RV. Although the news has been rather quiet this week, it does appear that we are very close. So it is time to make sure that you are ready for this event. If you do not yet have a trust, this is the time to get one. So, Jim, you want to get started?
Sure. Explain to me what exactly is a trust.
A trust is a fiduciary arrangement that allows a third party or trustee to hold assets on behalf of another. The concept of a private trust was established in England in the 13th century, and many aspects of trust activities have been codified into law in England, the U.S., and other countries. The trust that we use is a common law, irrevocable contract trust. It is valid and legal in all 50 states, as well as most common law countries. Its widespread use in Massachusetts in the early 1800s led to the name Massachusetts Business Trust. The trust that we use is based upon the Massachusetts Business Trust. As most of you are aware, we decided to drop the word business, a month or so ago, from the name as it caused a great deal of confusion, especially with the banks. But it's still a common law, irrevocable contract trust. So. Jim?
Yeah, can you explain some more about those terms?
I would love to. Many of us are familiar with a revocable living trust as a means of protecting our estates. While those statutory entities are great at avoiding probate, because there is no probate, the publicity usually associated with probate is diminished. In these aspects, the living trust is little better than a will. Living trusts, like wills, are subject to federal and state inheritance taxes. Revocable living trusts provide absolutely no protection to the assets that have been placed in them. The common law trust is in reality a contract where the equitable and legal titles remain united. And under this format, a private trust organization can be created. This trust organization has substantially more benefits than a living trust, including the ability to keep creditors away from the trust assets. The common law provides for complete, fee-simple transfer of property, both titles, equitable and legal, into the trust organization. Now you no longer own the property, nor do you have to title it in your name. Because you no longer own the property or you purchase it in the name of the trust, no one can take it from you as you do not own it. And this, folks, is very, very, that's one of the most important sentences here. You don't own it, so nobody can take it from you. The real advantage of the common law trust is that the property placed in trust by the investors, yourselves, typically called grantors in statutory trust law, will not ever be probated, subject to estate taxes and or gift taxes, or subject to liabilities created by the original owner after the transfer to the trust organization. Because the common law trust is irrevocable, it effectively shields the trust assets from personal creditors.
Well, in that case, then, who owns the trust?
Actually, it's an entity unto itself, and it thus owns itself. You, as trustee, are the manager.
I've heard that these books, or that the banks will set up skeletal trust for us. What can you say about that? What do we know about that right now?
Well, I've heard that as well. And the biggest issue I have with that is that the bank becomes your partner with trustee authority. I mean, do you really want that? You know, we've all been most of us have been waiting a long, long time for this RV to happen. And when it does happen, we want to be in complete control of our own destiny, of our own funds. If we go along with this so-called skeleton trust, which I believe is just a revocable statutory trust, and the bank is the trustee, you're kind of left out in the cold. And I don't think that's what any of us really want.
No, I agree with that. But I just heard yesterday that possibly they're going to give us this skeletal trust for just a couple days while they review, their legal department reviews the trust. Have you heard anything about
that? I have not heard that.
Okay, well, I'll follow up on that, see what I can find out.
I appreciate that, yeah.
All right, so how do I get the currency into the trust to start with?
You and a curator exchange the title to your currency for $21 and trust certificates that evidence the exchange. Jimmy, you want to talk about the $21 and certificates for a moment?
Sure. The $21 come from the Constitution for the United States, not of the United States. And in there it says that any debt in excess of $20 you're entitled to a jury trial. Well, I'll tell you, folks, you can probably educate a jury. I doubt if you'll educate a judge. So you always want to get that jury trial. Excuse me. So anything in excess of $20. So we chose to go with $21. Personally, I like to use real money or an item that would reference real money. So I like to use the
silver certificates.
Thank you. I'll use those. Anyway, so what we do is we go to the numismatic coin store and I buy those. You can get them for $2, $3, $4 a piece for a $5, $6, $10 bill, whatever it may be. There's all kinds of bills out there. So I buy those and then I just attach them to the trust. So we want to always use $21. You want to attach it to the trust and it stays with the trust for the duration. Does that help a little bit, Carol?
Yes, perfectly, thank you. Because a lot of people ask, well, why 21? What's the deal? Now you've told them.
Okay.
So this method of exchange has been a sufficient paper trail for centuries, but it appears it may not be enough for the RV. And I don't know this for fact. I received a letter of transfer and conveyance of property, which I have emailed to all of you with the invitation to this call. While I'm not sure it's necessary, I do feel it's better to be safe than sorry. Someone did bring it to my attention that in some states, it requires two witnesses rather than one, et cetera, et cetera. All I know, folks, is I got this in an email by someone, I think this Dr. Adept, who appears to be right on top of this whole RV. If you are new to this call and you did not just get an invitation, please drop me an email and I'll make sure I send you a copy of it. It also sort of throws a monkey wrench, if you will, into some of my earlier suggestions about exchanging. And we've talked about, okay, if this is going to be a tax-free exchange, and I know I'm getting a little ahead of myself here, if this is going to be a tax-free exchange, how do I get money out ahead of time? And I've often said, when you go to your exchange and say, okay, Mr. Banker, now that I have all this money, I want this, 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 and this. Well, if you use this letter of transference and conveyance of property, you are putting all of your currency into the trust. So, and Jim, you might add and correct me if I'm wrong on this. So instead of putting 1 million dinar in this trust, you might want to put 950,000 dinar into this trust and keep back 50,000 for yourself for whatever cash need you may have. Do you agree with that, Jim?
I do. I think that's a great idea. Just make sure you have a personal checking account at the bank that you're dealing
with.
Yes,
absolutely. Yeah. Thank you. I know we did not discuss this, but I've been thinking about it, and like I said, this flies in the face of everything I've been talking about for months. But as long as you keep some out ahead of time and you do not say it's going into the trust, then you'll have the cash you need for doing whatever you need without paying tax on it. Okay.
I think that's a good idea. We'll have to check out when we get there. But okay, anyway, so I know the trusts have trustees that manage the property. Who is the trustee in the trust that you create?
Well, the trust agreement allows for the creator to choose anyone to be a first trustee, even you. So you now manage and control those same assets that you once owned. The creator is a disinterested third party who assists you in creating the contract trust by exchanging your assets into the trust. The creator can be anyone you choose. He or she only has two tasks, to initiate the exchange and appoint a first trustee. After that, the creator shall have absolutely no further duty or obligation to the trust, nor will it and its appointed trustees have any obligation or duty to the creator. The first trustee, you, shall then independently appoint a second trustee, your spouse, if you have one, and they in turn may appoint a third trustee and so forth. You know, I've been asked the question about investor exchanger and the trustee being the same person and the possibility of the problems that can be created by this relationship. Years and years ago, when my husband and I were first into the trust business, I'm sure you can't run into this at the same time, Jim. We would go to a trust seminar, and they'd talk about being a trustee, and you'd have to have a corporate trustee or name your buddy or name your brother-in-law. And, you know, well, why can't you be your own trustee? Oh, you just can't be your own trustee. Remember that, Jim, those days?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. So, you know, we've obviously done some research on it. So there are numerous, like I said, there are numerous court decisions on the issue of the investor exchanger being the same person. So the following, what I'm going to talk to you about, is a Supreme Court decision that addresses the issue directly. Quote, the legal title, possession, and control of property may, by declaration of trust, be passed irrevocably from the grantor or investor to himself as trustee, with the same effect as if the trustee receiving the conveyance had been another person. And this was Becker, Collector of IRS versus St. Louis Union Trust back in, I don't remember what year this was. But anyway, it's there in black and white, folks. You can legally be the trustee of your own trust. Don't let anybody tell you different.
Well, is it necessary then to have more than one trustee?
No, if you are single, you can be the only trustee. Typically, couples are both trustees. However, the trust is created without regard to community property status. So let's say you're gifted some currency, and your husband thinks it's a scam. We've all heard that, right? So you can create your own trust with yourself as the only trustee. Your husband then has absolutely no interest in trust or access to the funds in it. If you care to add him at a later date, you may do so. The same holds true if one spouse is mentally unable to manage the trust.
Well, how do I take care of my kids and my future generations then?
Well, the contract trust, unlike a revocable living trust, is created in contemplation of life, not death. So when you and your spouse pass away, the contract trust does not die with you. Instead of beneficiaries, we have successor trustees. Those are persons named by you to take over the management of the contract trust when you die. So, typically, most people name their adult children as successor trustees. If your children are still minors, you can name them as successor trustees, as long as you name an interim successor trustee to stand in for them until they are able to take over the responsibility of the trust. You can add a bloodline clause to ensure your family's generational wealth does not fall into others' hands. You can also add a spendthrift clause, so no one can hypothecate or pledge his or her possible share of trust income. You can designate one or more successor trustees, specifying that they both become trustees at the same time or one goes before the other. You can change this designation at any time for any reason.
Well, what if I wish to give my brother money after the RV? Giving him currency beforehand just won't work. What do you suggest?
Well, I think a lot of us have the same question. You know, we may have told our friends, we may have not told our friends and families about the currency, but we do desire to take care of them and their families. My suggestion is to create a trust for them post-RV. Your motherlode trust can fund it with whatever amount you choose. This is not considered a gift and does not create a taxable event. It's also a good resolve for taking care of your adult children while you are still alive. In either case, you should be co-trustee with them and resign when you feel they have the ability to competently manage the assets of the trust without your assistance and watchful eyes.
Well, how do I get money out of the business trust?
Yeah, you always have to ask that. There are several ways to get money on the business trip. You can and should take a salary. You as trustee can declare distributions to the certificate holders, you know, but both of these methods are taxable events. The trust can pay for some expenses for you, like medical reimbursements, business investments, etc. For instance, you can visit a foreign destination, pick up brochures, business cards, etc., and have the trust pay for it. Now, you know, I wouldn't go hog wild and go to the Caribbean and charge everything to the trust. I mean, your wife's new bathing suit is not part of trust expenses, but the trust can pay for most of it legitimately. And the trustees also have the authority to lend money occasionally, with or without interest or security, except that no loan may be made to any trustee or to any certificate holder without their security. And all that involves is a promissory note. You know, amounts, payments, interest rates can be anything reasonable, including jumbo loans, 10 or 20-year balloon notes, for example, those kinds of things. The trustees can choose to create and fund additional trusts at any time for any lawful purpose. Again, this is not a taxable event, and I feel this is the best way to purchase property, etc. For instance, my husband and I have our eye on a home, and rather than borrowing money from the trust, which would still require making payments, certainly not borrowing money from the bank with a typical mortgage, not taking the money out personally, our mother lode trust is going to create a real estate trust that is going to purchase and hold title to that new piece of property. You know, so all these methods for paying for services, reimbursing expenses, and making distributions and loans all fall in with the guidelines of the IRS service codes.
Well, what about taxes?
Well, typically, the contract trust files a form 1041 on the money that it has earned, minus expenses. Now, some of you have had your trust for several years, and you go, well, what do I have to do? Well, unless your trust earned $600, you don't have to do anything right now. If you have filed with zero income, and I know some of you have, that's not a problem either. So I wouldn't worry about it until we start making some money. But we have heard that this RV will not be taxable event on the federal level. Recently, I've heard it won't be taxed on any level. Have you heard that as well, Jim?
I have.
So, you know, we've always suggested domiciling your trust in a state that does not levy a state income tax. If you have done that and there's no tax upon the RV, then you can cancel that mailbox and domicile in your home state. Just make sure to note the change of domicile in your minutes. However, if it is domiciled, let's say, in Wyoming, and there is a state tax on it, you might be wise to keep the mailbox there. You're still going to be taxed on the earnings of the trust. Even if the RV is not taxable itself, you are going to be taxed on the earnings. So if you live in California or New York or Virginia or somewhere where the taxes are really, really high, you might consider leaving that domicile in Wyoming to avoid state taxation in those cases.
Well, then, okay, should I have an address other than my home for the trust, even if I'm in one of those states?
Yeah. You know, here, my husband and I live in Washington, and we have an address other than home for our trust. It's not imperative, but it's a really good way to protect your privacy and anonymity. The use of an outside address supports your trust for added security and tax benefits. You know, whether your trust is domiciled in Wyoming or in the city and state in which you live, to convince the powers that be that you are in fact operating as a trust and you as trustee, you need to receive all mail and email in the trust name and mailing address only. Jim, you mentioned something before about sending the trust a registered letter.
Right. Just take and write yourself a letter, basically, you know, address it to the trust. Say that this is a confirmation of the trust address. You just put that in an envelope. And then you seal it up, and then you send a return receipt requested to the trust address. When that arrives, if it's in your state, go pick it up. If not, have it sent to you. And then if you're ever challenged in a court of law that that's the true address for the trust, you can hand that unopened envelope to the judge, have him read it, and it proves to him that that was set up just for the trust.
That makes a lot of sense.
I have my moments.
Yeah. You want to go on with that?
Well, I don't know if there's much more we can say, except for when you're trying to establish the domicile of the trust, you already have an IRS EI number, employee identification number, and they have you on record. But unless you prove that that box is being used just for the trust, you may have a difficult time in case of maybe a lawsuit, for an example,
yeah.
wanted to protect your trust.
Yeah. So a court of law, in which most of us recognize as an oxymoron, could claim that you're operating in fraud and you're personally liable for the actions of the trust and have no protection personally from a lawsuit. And claims from an annoyed relative or ex and the evidence that you're operating personally and not as an entity could, you know, get you in trouble. If you do this correctly, like we're talking about, with verifying your address that it's separate from your home, you're going to eliminate some of those issues. If you get all your mail at your home, you know, they could come back and say you're not acting as though you're working for the entity. You are the entity, which is, what is the alter ego? So commingling of funds, assets, mailing address, email accounts, et cetera, you need to be operating arm's length. You need to be operating arm's length, but still have operational control.
Right. So if my trust is currently domiciled in a different state, for me it is, do I have to go to that state to exchange and open a bank account?
Nope. As trustee, you can exchange and open bank accounts wherever it's convenient to you. And corporations and LLCs have used these methods for years. And just as you personally can walk into Bank of America, HSBC, Wells Fargo, your local hometown bank, whatever, and open as many accounts as you want, you can do the same thing with your trust, using the same trust name and EIN number. But once again, it's important to remember that all bank statements and other bank mail be delivered to the domicile address of the trust.
Right. And what do you mean by commingling of funds?
Well, when you commingle your funds, you're treating your business funds as your personal money. Some of the most common ways to commingle are transferring money between business and personal accounts without documentation, writing business checks for personal reasons, expenses, and vice versa, having only one bank account for personal and business needs, depositing business checks into your personal bank account, withdrawing money from your business account to pay personal expenses without documentation. So if you have practiced any of those things, creditors can reach your personal assets if you commingle. And there lies with the biggest problem with commingling. It can also cause serious tax issues. And if you remember nothing else from this call, remembering that commingling funds between business and personal is a serious, serious no-no.
Good to know, but it sounds like operating a trust can be a little bit difficult.
Well, not really. It comes with complete operating instructions and access to our members-only website. And seeing how you are a webmaster, you want to tell people about our website.
Okay. Well, first thing, we're moving to a new server, hopefully tomorrow or Monday. So if you find that it's not accessible for a few hours, don't fret. It's just going through a transition. We're moving to a bigger server, so I'm going to set up a little bit differently. And since we base this thing on WordPress, seems like that's the types of sites that get attacked the most. We've got a special server that's supposed to be hardened to prevent those attacks. And those people don't know, we've been attacked a couple times. So anyway, the website is constantly evolving, and we're updating as quick as we can. We've got about 200 sample minutes that we're going to be putting on there shortly, and you'll be able to download those. Now remember, this is a members-only website. You have to be invited and approved to be able to use the website. That's about all I can think of. Anything else you want to add to that, Carol?
No, not really, but thank you, Jim. Appreciate that. And after we get through this section right here, maybe we can go to Q&A for a bit. But a very important operational requirement of the contract trust is you need to keep minutes. For example, if the contract trust is to make a major investment, such as a piece of property, or creating a second trust, or whatever it is, the trustees must have a meeting and record the minutes. You know, there are... As easy as this is, there are a few important considerations. For instance, when signing anything relating to the business trust, contract trust, you must sign it as John Doe trustee and not as otherwise. This statement limits personal exposure. And folks, whenever I have checks printed, that is always on my checks. Signing as trustee and not as otherwise. Go ahead, Jim.
I want to add to that what you just said. If it's not on a document, be sure you write it in your handwriting after your name. Say, trustee, not as otherwise. So my name is James Knox, comma, trustee, and not as otherwise. Make sure you add that. Very important. Now you want to go to Q&A?
Yeah, I do. And let's see, it looks like we have a few people online here.
Perfect.
Bill?
Hi, Carol.
How are you doing today?
All right. This is Bill. I have a – well, first of all, let me just say I appreciate everything I've learned so far from you. It's been very enlightening. I wouldn't have the level of understanding on trust that I have now if it wasn't, you know, for your calls and listening into your calls. So I really appreciate everything that I've learned from you. But my questions are relating to taxes. And you mentioned it earlier. So let's say I have several trusts. Let's say my mother lode is Trust A, and I have Trust B and Trust C, and I have, say, I have pass-through accounts set up from A to B and C. Basically, if I have earnings on C and no earnings on B and A, I would file taxes on the earnings on C and zero income on A and B. Is that correct?
It sounds right to me. What about you, Jim?
Yeah, I agree with that. That sounds good.
Okay. So that leads into the part B of my question, which is do I file 1041s on each of those trusts individually or the whole thing as a whole?
Well, each trust is a standalone trust with its own EIN.
Okay, so
which
I would
means
have
they all file taxes themselves.
Okay, so it would be 1041 on each.
Yeah.
I had a CPA. Would my CPA have to know about every trust or all my holdings, or is the mother load still kept confidential?
Well, I think that's a determination you have to make about your comfort level with your CPA.
Okay.
Or your wealth manager. You know, that's I can't make that determination for you.
Okay. All right. So in the past, it was mentioned about setting these up with non-interest-bearing accounts versus interest-bearing. What is your recommendation now?
To my knowledge, and Jim, if you have anything to add to this, please do. To my knowledge, it's been suggested that when we exchange into non-interest-bearing accounts. Accounts that we open after that may be interest-bearing. Is that to your understanding as well, Jim?
It is. I do believe that they're going to change quite a few laws here. You know, they've already changed quite a few in the banking industry, and we're not really privy to some of them, but I think that's going to change drastically. One thing I'd like to add also is on the mother lode trust, don't have any accounts attached to that. In other words, don't have a checking account attached to it. Don't have a debit card, none of that stuff. Just
I
have
totally
a mother lode. Yeah. You want
I
to
totally
go to the
agree.
Bank.
Yeah.
You want to go to the bank and you want to physically be there and tell them what you want done. That way nobody knows about that account and it's not likely to be hacked. I've had that issue recently where my checking account got hacked twice. And it's really a problem trying to get all that squared away. Now, it was not a trust account, but it was a checking account, and it's really a pain in the butt. And it seemed to be, I had bought stuff at a what I call a quick rip, you know, 7-Eleven type store, and the terminal was not secure, evidently. So.
Okay. So, and I kind of learned that too from listening to Carol in the past. Either bank certified or wire transfer from your mother lode. So basically, I wouldn't necessarily have a pass through account set up from the mother lode to the B and C trust funds.
I would say that I would go to the bank and tell them, okay, I've got trust A, which is my mother lode, and I want to move some money to trust B. I would do that, go to the bank and do that Personally, I wouldn't attach any accounts. In my opinion, Carol may have a different opinion, but in my opinion, you want to make sure that that one account, of all accounts that you have, that one account is totally 100% secure.
I totally agree. I wholeheartedly agree.
Okay. And then the last question I have, I think, Jim, you mentioned about confirmation of your trust address.
Yes.
And proof of domicile is to send an unopened certified letter or have that sent back to you to present to the court.
Correct.
Would I do that twice if I want to see what's in it myself?
Well, you could. You could. The more the merrier, you know, get as much mail through there as you can. You can always take because you'll have the green card for both those envelopes. And you just want to make sure you take something to the judge that's unopened with everything attached to it. And what I would even suggest to go further, if you get to the point where you have a full-time attorney or attorney you're working with through this process, make sure he has that. So a third party carries it, you know, and then the judge would be presented that by your attorney, and that gives you another avenue of security.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you both. That's all the questions I have.
Right. Thank you, Bill. And we've got a few more here. Well, hey, Judy. Glad you could make it.
I mean, I've been here since 5 to 1. I just don't know how I dialed in the code, the moderator code. And I couldn't get in. I've heard every word. And thank you, Jim, for filling in for me. I really appreciate it.
Not a problem.
Okay. I don't know why, Carol, but I've been here from before 1.
Oh, okay. All right. I'll let you off this time.
I'm sorry to disappoint you.
We've got a couple more callers here. Okay. Wireless caller, area code 941.
Hi, Carol. It's Connie.
Hey,
on
Connie.
The letter of transfer and conveyance of property that y'all did, can you explain about that?
I mentioned your concern. Let me see if I can find that. Why don't you, while I'm looking for it, why don't you tell us what your concerns were?
Well, okay. I wasn't concerned about this letter. What I did mention is that anybody in the state of Florida, according to, you know, the notaries and the law and real estate, which I've been a broker owner for 50-some years, so I know we need 2 witnesses on documents. So on this particular one at the bottom, I would just draw a line or redo it and put an additional signature of witness so that you're covered if you're in Florida. And you need to, you know, just check, you know, with your attorney or your accountant and find out, and prayerfully they're credible and they'd be able to answer that for you.
That's a good point. Thanks for bringing it up. Appreciate that, Connie.
Absolutely.
And also you mentioned in your email about the changing the verbiage. As most of you know, we took the word business out of the trust, and I offered to redo your cover pages for you. I will be happy to do that if you send me an email and ask me. I'm just not doing randomly and sending them to everybody. I'm doing them for anyone who asked me about it. So, anything else, Connie?
Yes. Can you go over the letter of transfer and conveyance of property? Why did you do this one?
Well, I didn't. As I say, I got it in an email.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I got it in an email from this Dr. Adept, I believe her name is. And she has been sending out quite a bit of information regarding this exchange. Again, I'm not on her email list. It was emailed to me by a third party. If any of you would like me to forward her stuff to you, I'd be happy to. Again, you just have to ask me to do it. This letter, as I said, for all these years, and I, you know, Jim can back me up on this, the evidence of exchange in the trust has been sufficient, you know, Schedule A and Schedule B. It's been sufficient to show the transfer from yourself to the trust. However, you know, we're dealing with something brand new, and we're baking a whole new cake here. So I can't comment on how the banks are actually going to react. If we are dealing with someone who supposedly has some inside information and is willing to share that, I will share it with you when I can. But I don't know that it's going to be necessary. But as I said, you know, I'd rather be safe than sorry. So I'm going to print one up for myself. Yeah.
Right. Always better to be prepared. And
yes.
So where she put 100,000 Iraqi currency, we would be putting in our amount.
Exactly. Whatever you have, whatever you designated to go into your trust. And again, folks, you know, I've said to most of you, it's not necessary at this time to fill in the amounts on your trust. Because as I said, you know, you may want to take $100,000 out of there. You can't do it if you've already put it in the trust. If you keep it separately, I mean, I would write those numbers in after I exchange. Would you agree, Jim, or not?
Oh, I totally agree. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Things
change.
You would change these figures, did you say? Because who actually will we have to show this document?
Nobody.
You're not going to show
your trust to anybody. You may have to show this trust conveyance letter to your banker.
Okay. But that's where we would be doing the exchange, unless we're, you know, doing it through an attorney out of state.
Exactly, yeah. When we go to the bank, we're going to need that kind of letter.
Okay.
So it means you're going to need your abstract of trust, you're going to need your EIN, and you're going to need that trust conveyance letter. I would rather go in with it and not have to use it than to, God forbid, have to make another appointment and go back.
Exactly. Well, it's just better to be prepared, and so many people are not knowledgeable, and we all need to be updated and stay current with the changes that are going on.
Exactly.
So I think this is excellent that you shared this.
Well, thank you.
And I thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, thanks, dear. I'm going to sign off.
All right, thanks. All right, we have... Hi, Dick. You're back.
Kara, this is Dick Schultz.
Hi.
I am way, way behind on everything. How do I get caught up on all this?
Well, all of our calls are archived, and I'm also on YouTube, if that's what you're interested in.
Yes, that's perfect.
Yeah, that'll help. If you look at the information that I sent about the call, and there's information there on how to go to the replays in the archives. We are currently on call 66, so you can punch in any number before that and get any previous calls. A lot of my calls are also on YouTube. Just type in my name.
Okay, Carol. And I didn't get a call. I mean, I didn't get an email from you. You may have an old email of mine.
Okay, let me write that down right now, Vic. Hang on.
Okay.
Well,
if you want to call me back later,
yeah.
Just call me back at my business line, 425-820-8090, and I'll make sure we get that to you, okay?
That was 425-820-8090?
Yes.
Great. Yes, I'll do that. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. And we have another one here. Area code 602.
Hi, Carol. This is Gary in Phoenix.
How are you doing today, Gary?
Good. I just lost my voice there for a second. The previous caller, two callers ago, answered my question regarding the letter of transfer and reconveyance. I was going to ask you, do I need to send you an email to forward that information to me, or how would I be able to get that?
Did you not get an email on this call today?
I got an email on the call, yes.
But there should be an attachment to it.
Oh, geez, you know what? I went down to the number to call, and I didn't go further than that. Okay, I will look at that.
I said at the bottom, read the attachment.
See, I obviously need another cup of coffee.
There you go. Okay.
Thank you, Carol. That was my only question.
All right. Thanks, Gary. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Oh, so, Jim, are you ready to come back online?
Sure.
We're on number 16.
Right. Do Do I need more than one trust?
Well, you know, we were just been talking about the mother load trust. We consider your first trove to be your mother load. And this is the minimum trust number of trusts you really need at RV time. We anticipate, however, that you will want to set up more trusts post-RV. You know, we've got real estate trusts, vehicle trusts, personal property trusts, charitable trusts. They are all standalone entities, which can be funded by the mother load trust. If they require a bank account, they will need a new EIN. Now, folks, this is not a sub-trust. Your mother load is your mother load. You know, mother load goes, what, back to old mining terms when they found the big vein of gold or whatever? That's the mother load. Whatever we set up is maybe funded by the mother load, but they're not stacked. They're not dependent upon each other other than the initial funding. This way, they're all totally separate entities. You can do whatever you want. You can set up as many as you want. A lot of people right now have already anticipated future needs, and they've set up additional trusts. So when we've been talking a little bit about pass-through accounts. So when you go for your RV, you have all this money. You might want to set some aside for pass-through accounts, and that's how you are going to fund these already existing trusts without it being a taxable event. If it's a brand new trust post-RV, it will still not be a taxable event because one is funding the other. Jim, would you agree?
I would agree with that.
Okay. Thank you.
So what other services do we offer?
Well, aside from multiple trusts, we also offer the triple play, which consists of a pour over will that states that anything you own in your own name at the time of your death pours over into the trust you designate. The triple play also includes a durable power of attorney. So your designated agent has the legal authority to handle your financial decisions for you if you're unable or unavailable to do so personally. You know, you might be ill. You might be out of the country, and you have something to attend to here. If you already named a power of attorney, he or she can take care of that for you. It also includes an advanced health care directive, sometimes known as a living will, or a power of attorney for health care. It is a legal document in which you specify what action should be taken if you're no longer able to make decisions for yourself because of illness or incapacity. And Jim, didn't this come into play with your brother?
It did. As a matter of fact, this last weekend I had to take care of my brother. And then just prior to that, about a month and a half ago, my closest friend had to have his sixth surgery and had to take care of all of his legal stuff there because he had some complications. He was out longer than they thought. So it's very important to have this. I mean, I used it with my father before his passing. So the health care directive is also, it's a two-way street for me. My good friend I was referring to, his name was John, has the same for me. We joke, well, I can pull the plug on him and he can pull the plug on me. You know? But it's that powerful. If it should get to that point, that's what you're looking at. You're looking at helping your loved ones as best you can or your friends.
Yes. Estate planning is more than just about the money.
Yes, it is.
There's so many, especially this healthcare directive. And I've used this example before. Let's say it's an older couple, and one of them has a heart attack, and the kids are walking around. Oh, What would Mom want me to do? I don't know what to do. Mom has already made the decision with this healthcare director. She's already made a decision about what she wants done or what to happen in certain circumstances. So it's very, very important. The triple play that we offer, as you can see, is pretty wide-ranging, but it's very, very reasonably priced. It's only $350 for a couple or $275 for a single. If you go to an attorney for that, you might add a zero to that.
Yeah.
And you might get a healthcare directive at the doctors or at the hospitals, but all it does is give them the right to treat you. That's all. So something to seriously consider.
Well, the next question is, how long are we going to be working, we, post-RV?
Well, like most people, Jim and I and the rest of our staff want to retire. but we will be available for at least 6 months post-RV. And I'm not saying hard and fast that the RV is tomorrow, that we will quit 6 months of the day. We're all gonna need a little time of our own to go take care of our own exchanges. I'd say roughly six months after that. I will probably more than likely always be available by telephone. And, you know, if you haven't gotten your stuff together in 6 months, I mean, you just got to try and work at it, folks. But I am moving to Oklahoma next weekend, as I mentioned, so I will be out of pocket for a few days. My phone number and email address will be the same. My staff, Jim and David, and Judy as well, will also still be available to work with you regarding your trust needs. Jim, you have anything to add to that?
Well, yeah. You get to take a vacation after 6 months, but I'm stuck. I have a website to manage.
This is true.
I got the wrong end of this deal.
But you do such a good job at it.
I know. So speaking about the website for just another minute here, I'm looking for a webmaster to help me take care of some stuff. So if anybody out there has a qualified webmaster, now this would be just a part-time gig, you know, helping us out from time to time, I'd be interested in hearing about them. And you can get a hold of Carol. You have her email address, and then she'll get it to me, and then I can interview them. So we're looking. So that's all that I wanted to add. What's next?
Okay, well, it looks like we have another caller.
Okay.
Hello, Dick.
Yeah, Carol, this is Dick again. I just want to know what that website address was that Jim's talking about.
www.
Mm-hmm.
Indicator, that's INDICATOR, information.com. So there's very little public content on that page. However, okay, if you email me and ask me for the invite code, you will be amazed at the amount of information on that website.
Great. Now, do you mind giving me your email address, or would you rather not do that online?
No, I'm going to do that at the end of the call.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Anybody else? Okay. Well, you know, on our last call, we talked about raising prices, but I've decided to postpone that until post-RV. Most of us are still in the same position of being currency rich and cash poor. I'd like to see as many of you get this taken care of pre-RV rather than post-RV, so we are not changing prices right now. We're still only charging $14.95 to establish a contract trust, and we do accept all four major credit and debit cards. We also pay a $300 referral fee. Family discounts and secondary trusts are only $11.95. And right now we're looking at about a week to complete them. That will be considerably longer post-RV, so we encourage you to act quickly. And folks, everything we're hearing is we're at the door. The contract trust comes with easy-to-follow instructions and over 250 pages of outstanding contract trust legal backup on a USB drive that supports its existence. I hope that this call has been helpful and provided the basis for you to understand the advantages and attributes of the common law contract trust. Should you have any questions, please feel free to contact us, and we're more than happy to try to answer them for you. If you answer a question we can't answer immediately, we will get the answer for you. Again, thank you for your attendance and attention. Thank you, Jim, for your assistance today. I really appreciate you stepping in for Judy. Once again, my name is Carol Werlius. My telephone number is 425-820-8090. I'm available between 9 and 5 Pacific time. My email address is info@indicatorinformation.com. Our next call, hopefully, will be in 2 weeks, and I should be firmly ensconced in Oklahoma by then. So I will talk to you between now and then. Go RV. Have a great week, everybody, and thank you again for attending. Bye-bye.